This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week, we heard that FTX creditors will get 118% of their funds back in cash. According to a new plan by the estate, the new reorganization plan would see a whopping 98% of creditors get back 118% of their claims in cash within 60 days of a court approval. Now, this plan has been celebrated by some, but our next guest has a bit of a different view. Bankruptcy attorney and co-founder of Found.xyz, Nicholas Hall, took to X recently to outline the hidden pitfalls of the plan. He joins us now to dig a bit deeper. Nicholas, welcome to First Mover.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being here. Now, let's just start very broadly here. What did you think of the estate's plan when you initially saw it?
Overall, I think that there are just some misconceptions, right? In the bankruptcy process, not everybody's going to be happy. Actually, it's said that a good negotiated plan is something that nobody's happy with, other than the attorneys, obviously, because they're getting paid. But the recoveries are high on a typical bankruptcy basis. But for those creditors and customers that, you know, they had Bitcoin, Solana, other digital assets that have, you know, substantially increased in price since the petition date, they're not getting that back. And that's a huge disappointment for them. So while the recoveries are high, you know, with standards in a typical Chapter 11 reorg, they're not necessarily up to par for the customers that have missed out on the appreciation market. That being aside from just the recoveries, you also have to look at the fact that many of these customers are international. They're in countries that don't have the best banking laws and or most trustworthy governments. And so they're going to have to rely on a cash check, which, you know, their banks typically freeze large deposits. And so, you know, they really pushed hard for stablecoin distributions, and that's not going to be the case as of right now. Another issue is that there's going to be a mandatory 30% tax withholding for foreign customers. That's typically when you have profits, for instance, if you make an investment in the United States. So their argument as a customer is, look, I was in the FTX.com trading platform, which is out of the Bahamas, not in the United States. And so therefore, my funds should not be taxed pursuant to, you know, United States laws. It's a little bit of a mixed reaction, and we will see what kind of pans out through the restructuring process.
Can you compare this to other bankruptcies for me? I think a lot of people are looking at this and thinking, at one point, we thought FTX creditors were not going to get any money back, and now the estate is saying 118%. That sounds kind of good. Is this typical?
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing typical in a case of this size, this magnitude. With this level of systemic fraud. And in fact, if you would compare it to a typical fraud case, I would say the FTX customers are getting back much more than you would like in a Ponzi scheme case, like a Madoff case. So that's the argument for the estate professionals, right? They're saying compared to other bankruptcies that are similar, where you have massive fraud, these customers are getting a great return. But once again, you know, unlike other cases, this is digital assets, and digital assets have appreciated since the petition date. So the customers are going to say, well, look, the market did this for you. The market is what pumped the prices that you've been liquidating of these digital assets. And that's what's resulted in this perceived windfall of a restructuring plan. And more specifically, there are customers like Sunil and others in the coalition group, and they're going to say, look, we want our actual assets back. We don't want cash distributions. There's a reason we were in Bitcoin, these crypto assets. There's tax reasons why they didn't want to liquidate their assets. You may, for tax reasons, want to hold that long term. So they're not happy whatsoever. And I totally understand that. So, you know, we will see where this goes. This is still, there's a lot of baseball to play, as they would say. While it seems like we're very close to confirmation, there's just many different things that can come out in this negotiated process. And I do think that the customers will get some concessions going into the confirmation hearing.
It's interesting you bring that up. Do you think we could see a lawsuit from creditors trying to get their actual assets back instead of the cash equivalent?
Yeah, so there is, right? So Neil and Pat Rabbit, some of the other creditors, they have filed a lawsuit. And so there's a class action lawsuit too against Sullivan Cromwell, who's debtor's counsel. And so, you know, that obviously is going to be kind of dealt with by Judge Dorsey in the confirmation process. They'll likely table it and be dealt with post-confirmation because there are parties involved, such as the ad hoc committee, which is, you know, a committee that was formed, sanctioned by the court, to represent the international creditors. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. I will say that there's the examiner's report due May 24th, and that's going to have a huge impact. We'll see how that kind of influences the confirmation negotiations going through the summer.
Now, we've touched on some of the points you brought up in your ex post, cash distributions, undeliverable distributions, tax withholdings, but we haven't touched on KYC yet. Unpack that a little bit more for me. What are your concerns when it comes to KYC as it pertains to the plan?
Customers would definitely say concerns with execution. Actually, they provided documents, and the plan administrator is going to likely be who has administered the KYC through the case, which is Kroll. The customers have had just a very difficult time getting their documents approved. And so in the plan, you have 3 months, 90 days. If you do not get your KYC approved, you don't get your distribution. Furthermore, you don't get future distributions. You essentially forfeit your entire claim. So that is a huge concern for many customers. For claims traders, obviously they look at that as shrinking the denominator. That's great from their perspective, because, you know, that means they could increase the distributions beyond what's even in the plan to date. So yeah, it's a contentious issue, and, you know, hopefully that can be resolved, because a KYC is subjective. There's not necessarily like a litmus test here on approval or denial. So, That is something that definitely, I think, will be negotiated heavily between the committees and the estate.
Do you think it's likely a court is going to approve this plan anytime soon?
In its current form, no. I think that there's any plan is a negotiation. There's some 3D chess that will take place. For instance, I've been in meetings with some other funds that are looking at other classes of creditors to acquire so they can file litigation to negotiate better terms. So they understand it. And some of the customers do too, which is Sunil and the coalition. You know, they weren't necessarily satisfied with what the ad hoc committee was doing. So they took it upon themselves to file and form their own committee, which anybody can do. They petitioned the court to try to get sanctioned. And we will see what comes of that. They filed the class action lawsuit. They're doing all the necessary steps to assert their rights for themselves and on behalf of other similarly situated customers. And so I do think that all of these things, when combined, are going to be extremely influential in getting the customer better. These terms we discussed, right? Getting the KYC, maybe a little bit more time. Getting on the cash distributions, definitely putting in place a stablecoin facility. Also with the, there's some other terms like, hey, if you are, don't deposit, if it ends up being that you get a cash check, right? And you don't deposit it for 6 months under the plan as it is now, that reverts, that you escheat your property to the estate. What if you're traveling? What if you're in the hospital? What if any of these things happen? And so under state law or federal law, usually that's what controls forfeited or undeliverable or undeposited distributions. The plan currently says that, yeah, that doesn't matter. We're just going to tell you after 6 months you cut off. So I do think that these things will be negotiated and changed in the plan, going into confirmation.
Nick, how long do you think this process is going to take?
I think it's going to go fast. I think the plan is strapped to a bulldozer and they're going to get it through the finish line. I would say right now, if you look at the plan, there's some Easter eggs, some clues that give you some idea as to dates they're targeting. They have August in there. I think that that's a little optimistic. It's really hard to solicit millions of customers during a couple months. So I think we're looking at September, October for confirmation. And I think that the first distribution to the entitlement, to the convenience class, that's looking at, earliest November, more than likely December or early next year. So maybe, there's a good outcome here where people get a distribution of their funds for Christmas.
All right. I want to turn now to your company. It's called Found XYZ. You say that you help FTX creditors get the best price for their claim. Talk to me a little bit about how that works and what you do.
We tokenize the claims, but essentially it's a marketplace where you can go to list your claims. And we bid your claim out to every single buyer, big or small. And so it's an extremely competitive sales process where, there's no pressure, no stress. You don't have to sell if you don't want to. So we've taken this approach to really automate and streamline the process, which reduces, of course, the dependencies, the cost, but ultimately results in the highest price that you can potentially get for your claim. There's been a lot of players in this space that are funded or otherwise, but we're fully bootstrapped and we've done second most volume of any platform in FTX. So it's helped a lot of customers.
You're a marketplace, so I'm assuming your business model is you make fees off of the claims that are tokenized and then sold to others?
That's correct. We get a 1-point standard commission for trading debt, but that's paid for by the buyer. The seller doesn't have to pay us anything, and they don't pay us anything if we don't get them a sale that they agree to. And again, they're free to list anywhere they want to. Our approach is like, look, we have a best price guarantee. If you're unsatisfied at any point in the process, you don't have to sell and you can sell elsewhere. We don't care. So we're highly motivated to get people a good outcome. And ultimately, we also have the biggest buyers for USDC. So that's one of the things we did early on in this case is obviously we have a digital asset or crypto payment rail. And so they can get paid in USDC and we keep all of their private information confidential.
Do you have a figure or an estimated figure on how many transactions have been made when it comes to tokenized FTX claims and how many fees you've got off of those transactions?
So we've done about $100 million in volume. There's been about $4 billion in this case that has traded to date. A lot of them have been large accounts through the platform. So, you can do the math on what we've been able to do to date. It's not necessarily like we're doing this, not necessarily the profit. We're doing this as a fintech company that's really looking at the future of tokenized financial assets. That's huge to us, and so we view that as the future. And ultimately, any successes that we have, we want to share that with our customers.
Well, I got to ask you, people watching this interview might think, you're poking holes in the bankruptcy claim. I think you brought up some valid points, but you also have a marketplace for tokenized FTX claims. So what would you say to someone who said maybe it's in your best interest to poke holes in these claims and bring up some of the discrepancies that you brought up because it might benefit your business?
Yeah, well, then I wouldn't tell you that I think that these things will actually get negotiated in the customer's favor. But I think, ultimately someone's got to bring it to their attention because if you don't do something about it, it's not going to change, right? You've got to be a zealous advocate of your rights and get these changes in the plan going into confirmation. So, that's been our approach, transparency, listing these things out. I feel like it's a disservice if I don't, as a bankruptcy professional, at least list these things out for customers because it necessarily hasn't been readily apparent to date. And so, everyone has the right to be a skeptic. Ultimately, the proof is in the pudding and we get the best prices for customers.
Now, we got to wrap this up, but are there any other crypto bankruptcies that you're watching this year? There's, we have Voyager, Genesis, any other ones that you're watching closely?
I mean, we have been working light speed, so we've been laser focused on FTX.